Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in the amazing guitarist, Marko Bjorkovic. Marko, welcome.
Thanks, Eric.
I'm so happy to have you here, my friend.
And I'm really happy to be here, too.
Yeah. Well, a little background. I met Marko. He's K the family now, but he's friend of family. I met him with Andrew Stout, a peer on Bound. We were all lucky enough to see the amazing Devin Townsend last Sunday. So we got to talking, and I was like, of course I'd love to have you on the show. Anybody, I said to Marko, I said, I love to talk to people who are all about it. And Marko looked right at me. He's like, well, I'm all about it. And I said, I know, man. So I'm happy that you're here and we can share what you're all about, my friend.
I'm really happy to be here, too.
Cool. So I always like to press rewind here. That's kind of my thing.
Go ahead.
So I want you to press rewind for me and take me back to when guitar comes into your life. I know we got your guitar with you here today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was your first one, but talk to me about when guitar comes into your life and it starts to bite you as something that you're really passionate about.
Well, that's a tough question to answer because really my passion for music came when I played Sonic Adventure on Sega Dreamcast.
Yeah.
And I remember being enamored by Jun Senua's guitar playing on it in certain levels, such as the Chaos 6 boss theme and in, what was another level called? Oh, Sky Deck. That had really awesome guitar work in it. And then sometime after that, my dad teaches me a little bit how to play acoustic guitar. And the song that I learned is the Big Bog Monsters song from Donkey Kong Country.
No way.
Yeah. This was back in 2001, but then I didn't play guitar until 2006, 2007, when my dad positioned my fingers correctly to play Crazy Train, and I got really serious about playing the guitar then. I was in middle school, and my youngest sister was born at the time, so it was a very sentimental moment to me.
Right. So when you were playing Sonic, did it dawn on you that that was like synthesized MIDI guitar, or it was just like you heard those melodies and you wanted to play it on guitar?
I heard the melodies and I wanted to play them on guitar, even though I had no clue how to.
What do you think was so impactful for you right then and there with that? Because it's funny because we've had other people, musicians, guitarists in, and they always say that, or one of the video games that comes up a lot is Tony Hawk. They love playing Tony Hawk and those songs inspired them. But the Sonic stuff is a little bit different because of the way it was composed and the denseness of the melodies.
Mm-hmm.
So did that strike you right away?
It did, as did the pick squeals that Jun Senua made.
Ah.
And I enjoyed the Tony Hawk games, too. I never owned any of them, but whenever they were demoed in stores, I'd always play them, especially at the Apple store at Tampa International Mall, when my dad would go speak to his business partner, and I would sit in the play area and play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
Nice. Yeah, that was a lot of good songs on those.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay.
Songs were by musicians from real life, like Motorhead.
Right. Yeah, that was real easy to picture someone playing guitar, you know what I mean? Where the Sonic stuff is, you know, way more composed, almost like a classical piece of music,
but exactly.
than MIDI. So when you very first start playing guitar when you're in middle school and you get to learn Crazy Train, what was that like?
It was awesome. And my dad said to me, you really have the fingers for a guitar. And I said, I want to start learning. So I went 2 years without a teacher. My very first teacher was Jerry Outlaw from the band Bogus Pomp, phenomenal musician and amazing guitar player. And I remember when I was just starting guitar, he'd always come in and restring my guitars that have floating vibrato bridges.
Oh, yeah.
He was my guitar taken away for that. But after a while, I figured out how to do it on my own.
Yeah, that's a trick.
Oh, I bet.
Well, what were you thinking when you were first playing guitars with the floating bridges and all that? Was it overwhelming, or were you just so excited it didn't matter?
It didn't matter. I remember seeing my first guitar that had a bridge like that. It was a Jackson Rhodes, the USA model from 2009 with the blue ghost flames.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, this is going to be awesome. But little did I know how much of a pain it would be to tune that damn thing.
Yeah, exactly. And restring it.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing. So, okay, do you remember the first song that you learned to play start to finish, beginning to end?
I guess if I had to pick one, I'd probably pick Enter Sandman by Metallica. That I learned when I was taking guitar class in high school, right when I started, back at St. Pete Catholic. I was in a guitar class, and I asked the teacher to print me out the tabs, and he did, and I learned the song.
Nice. What kind of advantage do you think it was being able to play music at school?
Well, you always had a teacher that was there for you and guided you. Even though this particular teacher, he let us do our thing. He more or less was a supervisor of the class. But He did teach here and there. He had what's called listening tests, where we listen to a song, identify what instruments are in, and form an opinion on the song.
Hmm. Do you remember any of those songs that you listened to and did that with early on?
Yeah, actually, he played two Radiohead songs on different tests. He played Red Barchetta by Rush, which made me really happy. I'm a big Rush fan.
Were you at that time?
Yeah, I was.
Oh, okay.
Because of my dad.
Oh, okay.
Who is awesome. I want to get to the musical side of my family later, but to further answer your question, Eric, he also played Dazed and Confused by Led Zeppelin, and he played something by the Beatles. Those were the only songs that I remember.
Do you remember anything about those songs sticking out to you, that was those that you recall? Was any of that stuff like really mind-blowing to you then? Like you mentioned Radiohead, you mm-hmm. know, what was it like the first time you heard Radiohead? Had you heard guitars sound like that before?
I think I had. I remember listening on the radio a bunch of alternative rock,
okay.
like Vertical Horizon, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, stuff like that.
Okay, so you're talking like the earlier Radiohead.
Yes, earlier Radiohead.
Okay, so in high school, you get to play in a little bit. When do you start knowing that, or when do you start dedicating enough time to it to develop some of this skill that you're going to show for us in a little bit? Because you've dedicated some real time to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess if I had to answer that question, probably around 2007 when I started playing, I knew this is the thing I want to do. And yeah, I wasn't very good at it at first, but it just felt so right.
Did you have anything that felt like that to you before that? What were your hobbies or things before music or alongside music?
Well, video games, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about that. You're still doing those side by side, yeah?
Not so much anymore.
No?
But I'm still listening to video game soundtracks every now and then, especially Sonic Frontiers.
Yeah?
I actually covered one of the songs, Find Your Flame, and it got over 2,000 streams on Spotify last time I checked.
Nice.
So that made me really, really happy.
Nice.
I feel like I gave back Sonic in a really big way.
Yeah, I was going to say pay some homage to what started it going a little bit.
Absolutely.
So at what point do you start breaking and you're playing more music than video games?
Around 2009 when I started learning a bunch of other metal classics like Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Black Sabbath, and Led Zeppelin and Rush. Even though I was not proficient enough to be playing Rush yet, I really don't want you to see my cover of Spirit of Radio that I posted years ago.
Well, you got to put them up there, the good ones and the early ones.
Yeah, that's true. And in the words of Glenn Fricker, take your time and be awful, because if you stick with it, eventually you're going to get better.
Right. That's a very good point. Do you remember at all a point when you started to feel like, wait a minute, I'm getting better at this?
Yeah, when I had my first teacher, Jerry. Before he gave me lessons, I was doing only downstrokes, but then he came and I started doing upstrokes and alternate picking.
Ah, so was the downstroke thing just a matter of, was the heavier music that you were learning first?
It was more of a comfort thing.
Ah. What do you think drew you to like the heavier stuff like Rush and things
probably
like
how
that?
Beautiful I thought it sounded. I remember hearing Master of Puppets for the first time, the solo, and it brought a tear to my eye, and I sat down in my room for hours and hours learning it.
Nice.
Before I took lessons with Jerry. And while I'm discussing bands I listened to, I think I went through a couple of phases a lot of guitar players go through. I had a Randy Rhoads and Eddie Van Halen phase. Then I moved on to Yngwie Malmsteen and Dimebag Darrell. Then I had a Rush phase. Oh, and speaking of having a phase where I listened to both Yngwie Malmsteen and Dimebag Darrell, there's a really funny video of Dimebag trying to give Yngwie a donut. Have you seen it?
No.
I'll show it to you after the interview, but it's really okay. Funny.
Nice. Well, maybe we'll drop a link to that one in the bottom. I can't imagine Dimebag the donut salesman.
I can.
So what were you thinking when you were hearing all these different styles of guitar? Did it seem like, was part of it that was exciting to you, that you could do like anything with it?
Absolutely. And feeling like I could shred when I wasn't proficient enough to, like, that spoke volumes to me, man.
Yeah?
It was unbelievable.
And at that point, you were just jamming in your room and
mm-hmm.
learning to play.
Mm-hmm. While also being in my high school's praise band. I went to a Catholic high school.
Okay.
And the music teacher at the time, who was also one of my music teachers from elementary and middle school.
Nice.
He offered me to play in the praise band when he was substituting for one of my classes. And I told my parents this when I came home that day, and they said, do it. So I did.
Nice.
And I really enjoyed it. feeling like that was my kind of my first experience with being in a band. And I remember I would constantly shred, but everyone loved it. And he'd say to me, "Doodles, we're not playing Eddie Van Halen."
So that was during your Eddie Van Halen phase.
Oh, yeah.
How important was it for you to have a mentor like that, if to use that word, as someone that was around you, like you said, in elementary school, middle school, and high school, that would give you those opportunities?
It meant a lot. He was a really great guy, and he was actually one of my mom's coworkers. My mom worked as a teacher at the school that, well, not the high school, the elementary and middle school that he taught at.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually classroom neighbors. So I got to see him a lot outside of school band rehearsals. It was really great. However, he wasn't my piano teacher. That was a different teacher from the school. And my parents had me do lessons with him for 10 years, even after I started playing guitar. And I remember constantly saying to them, "Mom, Dad, I want to quit piano for guitar." But they're like, "No, Marco, piano taught you music. Stick with it." And I'm like, "But I want to rock." Eventually, they relented right before I graduated high school.
Looking back on it, do you see the piano lessons as something that did help your guitar playing, though?
Oh, certainly. It made me realize guitar and piano are pretty much the same instrument.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people express that when they can play in both. What other instruments do you play? Or just those two? I shouldn't say just those two. Those two is a plenty.
I don't really play piano much anymore, but I can also play bass guitar. I played bass on all of my albums.
Well, let's take a little mission drift quick then, since we're speaking about your album. I know you got an album that you just put out not that long ago.
Yep, album number 9.
Dang. So we're going to Quentin Tarantino this one, where we start at the end and work our way backwards a little bit.
Awesome. I love to hear it.
Tell me the title of number 9. Tell us all the title of number 9 and a little bit about that one, and then a little bit about the road of how you got here.
Yep. Number 9 is Power Core.
Yeah.
It's what I call a mix of progressive metal, power metal, and metalcore. So if you love bands like Trivium, Avenged Sevenfold, Symphony X, Dream Theater, Firewind, Spirit Box, Periphery, Meshuggah, Nevermore, you're going to get a kick out of this album.
Nice. So how did this one come to be? When did you, how do you start writing? Where does Square One with one of Marco's songs?
Well, Square One with one of my songs is a certain life experience that I've had. And I think about, can I write a song about it or can I not?
Oh.
And once I can, I just feel the lyrics. I remember writing the lyrics to one of my songs, Anesthesia. I was feeling them and my head was like, this is good. Write this down.
That one came to you. But yep. You had the music done first, or that came as a lyrical idea first?
It came as a lyrical idea first. Sometimes lyrics come first. Other times music comes first. And if you heard this album and all my previous albums, you'd be thinking to yourself, Are these albums really by the same guy? Because Powercore is so much different from all my other albums. It's my first album that doesn't contain any instrumentals. My first couple are solely instrumental. My last album, Venom, had some instrumentals, but more vocals.
What made you decide to do this one all with lyrics?
Well,
or was just kind of the natural progression?
Something clicked and I became a good lyricist literally overnight.
You could package that up and sell
it. Yeah, I felt like I actually communicated my feelings with the audience.
For the first time?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first song you felt that way about?
If I had to guess, it was probably What We Accomplished. The first song that I released as a single. That was released during a really tough time in my life, but we'll get to that in a little bit. I want to backtrack a little bit and take you back all the way to album 1.
All right, take me back.
Yeah, it's called Memories Revisited, How Quickly Time Flies. And
what a great first title.
Yeah, my high school friends actually came up with that title.
Love it.
So I thanked them for that in the song title. And it was just instrumental stuff. It was me being a wannabe of Jason Becker, Marty Friedman, Imre Malmsteen, and Steve Vai. Because back then, I didn't think I could write good lyrics. And then after that, I got my 7-string right here for my 17th birthday, and I immediately made my next one, The Newcomer.
Well, let me ask you one thing. When you did your first record and it was all instrumental, how did you handle the drums? And I assume you played the bass.
I did play the bass, but the DAW that I used at the time, GarageBand, that had built-in drum tracks. So
okay,
I just used
you were
those.
Doing everything yourself, just straight bootstrapping it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And it didn't sound very professional.
Well, you got to get one out. I mean, you got to get them out. How does number 2 change?
Number 2 changes with the 7-string, and it changed with more badass music. And I remember I wrote a song for it, and it blew my dad away, and he showed literally everybody it. The song was Aircraft 343, which I wrote as a tribute to the Halo games.
Oh, cool.
Mm-hmm. And I remember he came to my room and he's like, you are freaking amazing.
What about the Halo games inspired the music? Or was it just the overall vibe? You just took the overall vibe and transmitted it into your interpretation of audio.
I took the overall vibe and I wrote a riff influenced by the Halo theme.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so at that point, are you thinking the heavier music, the seven string, this opened the door to a path you're going to start traveling a little more?
Certainly. And I continued that with my third album, Shadow of the Pain. That's the last album that I made during my time in high school. Keep in mind, Memories Revisited, I released when I was 16. The Newcomer and Shadow of the Pain, I released when I was 17.
And how long are these? They're like full-length albums, yeah?
Yeah, they're full-length. They're not on streaming services anymore. I took them down.
Yeah.
But they were good for the time, and I'm still very proud of them. And believe it or not, everyone in the school liked them. Even the teachers liked them. And the principal.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's showing a lot of initiative to take that all under your power mm-hmm. and push it across the line.
Mm-hmm. And if you can impress the principal, consider yourself badass, because the principal is usually the person every student fears.
Yeah.
But not this principal. This principal is really cool.
Love it when you get one of those.
Exactly.
Okay, so the third record was your last one you did while you were in high school.
Yep. And the fourth one was my first one I did when I was in pre-med. It was called the Statistics Album. I loved my stats teacher, Mr. Fransky. He was amazing, and he was a musician, too.
Nice.
In fact, in the senior prom, he took a video of me and him Russian Cossack dancing, and he made his profile picture on Facebook, and he wasn't sure if it was okay, but I told him, Mr. Fransky, do it, please.
Yeah. Nice.
It was awesome.
What do you think? Do you think there is a parallel or something that plays well between things like statistics and analytical thinking and how it can help your creative process, being able to do both?
Song titles.
Yeah.
I guess.
So when you're first in pre-med, I guess let me talk to you a little bit about that. You're passionate Absolutely. About music. You've made three records in high school.
Yeah.
How does the pre-med and the medical, because that's your other passion, how does that play in to your journey, especially that early on? And I know it's going to pretty quick here too, and we'll get to that. But how does, when you're coming out of high school, what were you thinking? Going to pre-med, what was that road like?
Even though my dad was a musician, he plays a bunch of instruments like guitar and saxophone and piano, but his main instrument's accordion. He's also a psychiatrist. So I've been fortunate enough to have medicine be a part of my life since I was very young.
Oh, cool.
And I remember living in Pennsylvania, and I'd go to the prison where he worked at, and just seeing the difference he made for the patients there, it spoke volume to me. It really did. My dad's my hero for that.
Yeah, that's very commendable. That's very cool.
Yeah. And then when we moved to Florida, he started working at another center called Bowley, but then he opened his own company called Focus Health, Inc. with his business partner that he met at the Apple store. So now he just reads reviews of patients.
Nice. So you had some precedent that you could make change and positive impact in people's life, and
Absolutely.
You wanted to do that.
Yeah. And I always wanted medicine as a career. During high school, I gravitated more towards the sciences, like biology and chemistry and physics and marine bio. And I took mostly science courses in undergrad as well. I was a bio major.
What was your goal with that?
To get to medical school, which I did at Ross University School of Medicine. But do you remember Hurricane Maria, the hurricane that came after Irma?
Mm-hmm.
It messed it up for me. So I was stuck down on that island that the school was on for 6 days. And I remember the Dominican citizens coming into the school and helping us evacuate while we provided them shelter. And we did other fun things with them too, like board games and video games. But of course, that was all merely a band-aid on a bullet wound.
Right.
We were eventually going to get home. They didn't have a home anymore. They lost everything.
Right.
So the school used what was left of it to shelter the citizens there. I hope they're doing okay.
Yeah, that's a long road. That's commendable that they did that. Mm-hmm. So then you come back to Florida. Where are you at in your desires to make music?
Well, I'm still making music. I played in my med school's jazz band.
Nice.
It was fun. Even though I think I only did one show with them. I was supposed to do a couple when the school temporarily relocated to Knoxville, but health issues got in the way of that.
Right. So you said jazz guitar. How many styles of music would you say you play, or is it more that you can play anything once you can familiarize yourself with it?
It's more I could play anything once I familiarize myself and get the feel down.
Do you play? Did you learn initially by ear? I know you said you had tabs, but
yes,
yeah,
I had tabs, but I also learned a little bit by ear as well. Eric, one thing I noticed is over the years, as you progress on guitar, you rely less on tabs and more on your ear.
Right. So that's what I was going to say. Do you can sit down and play along with most things?
Yep. So one part of Premed I forgot to mention. It was my very first band.
Yeah?
Yeah, Particle Effect.
Nice. I love that name. What was the, how did that come to be?
Well, it was a band that was established when I was in high school. And a mutual friend of ours, Jack Connor, who you might know from bands over the years like Zebra Geist and Vertebraker, he came over to my house one time and he told me about the band Particle Effect, who didn't have a guitar player and were looking for one. So they linked us up and I went over to the bassist, who's also the vocalist, Christian's house, and we jammed for a little bit and we became really close. Now we're best friends.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Love how music can bring people together.
Yeah. Oh, and at that time I released my fifth album, Emerald Fury.
Okay, so this whole time, no matter what you're doing, you're still writing and recording music.
Absolutely. The grind never stops.
and was that, I guess, is that because you've developed the ability to do it, or you just, you're constantly having songs you feel like you need to get out?
A little bit of both. There are some things that I feel like I need to just get out.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm also feeling them and I want to share them.
Right. So when you're writing things, do you just like sometimes hit record and just jam through and go back and pick through parts, or do you really methodically go about it?
I methodically go about it. Back then, I was writing the tabs on sheets of paper. You can imagine how tedious that was.
Right. With all the weird little marks and trying to make it be
on a notebook paper with all the lines going across.
Yeah.
I don't think Guitar Pro was around at that time.
No, if it was, it wasn't definitely not a lot of people using it. Mm-hmm. So, okay, you're writing all these records. You get to album 4. What was album 5 you said?
Emerald Theory.
Emerald Theory. And where are you at in life in this one?
I was at my senior year of college, right before I started med school and right as I was joining Particle Effect. I want to mention Particle Effect was literally the Floridian Rush. Do you know what I mean?
No, tell me. Well, I think vaguely, but...
Here's what I mean. You have a bassist who also sings and plays keyboard, like Geddy Lee. You have a Serbian guitar player, me, like Alex Lifeson. Nice. And you have a drummer who's an introvert, but is among the best in the world, like Neil Peart.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, playing in a three-piece is fun. Do you like that? When it's just three-piece, just guitar, bass, drums?
A little bit, but it's also fun to have another guitarist to trade solos off of.
Right. So how, when you're writing your music, how do you handle it? Do you just look at it as an orchestration?
I do, but I also structure it out like verse, pre-chorus, chorus, some extra riff. It's a little hard to come up with a solid structure for all your songs when you delve into prog metal. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking, or that's kind of what I'm curious about, because even 5 records worth of material, we're not even to making it to 9 yet. Even 5 worth is quite a bit of material. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what your creative process is, sorting that all out, that you've gotten efficient enough to be able to get these out like that.
It's changed over the years. For my first couple of albums, I was playing mostly what I was thinking. I feel like with Venom for the first time, I was playing what I was feeling. And when I did my instrumental songs, I still thought of a verse, chorus, and pre-chorus. That was how Joe Satriani approached writing his stuff, like Surfing with the Alien. I remember watching one of his tutorials, and he said that he was going to teach the chorus of Surfing with the Alien. And it made me realize to myself, you know what? I could do this with instrumental music too.
Ah, since he referred to it as a chorus.
That's right.
Ah, nice.
You gotta love Satch. He's amazing.
Oh, yeah. And some very cool guitars.
Yep. My dad has one of Satch's guitars.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Even though he's more of a Les Paul guy, he loves Ibanez, too.
Yeah, Ibanez makes some great guitars for sure. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a guitar guy, it's hard not to be just a guitar guy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You get your favorites, but just love guitars.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what are you? Where are you at in life at record 5, and what are you thinking about your music?
I'm on record 9 right now. I didn't talk about record.
No, I'm saying,
I'm sorry, I misunderstood the question.
Yeah, I'm still trying to stick back at where you're at when you release record 5. Where are you at in your life, are you thinking that you're going into the medical field?
Yes.
And that you'll just keep making records as like a side quest?
Yeah, I'm still thinking that. While also gearing up for the dreaded test, that is the MCAT.
Oh yeah? Tell me about that.
Well, they changed it when I took it. They added a psychology section. And I always tell other people this, they should have called the MCAT the RCAT, because they test you more on research experiments rather than what's actually going on in medicine, how to properly diagnose and treat a patient.
Ah. So how long did you prepare for that? What was that like?
It was grueling, and I took a couple prep courses, one I flew out to, but it didn't help much. But I was very impatient at the time. I wanted to get everything done while I was young.
Yeah.
So that's why I went to med school. Around a year after I completed undergrad. And I didn't tell you what happened after the hurricane.
No, tell me.
Well, 3 weeks after they evacuated us, they put us on a boat, the GNV Excellent, which is a little ferry decked off of Italy or Spain, one of those two countries. And it was kind of unpleasant because you were lucky if you could charge a computer while studying.
Right.
The food was free, even though it was not very good. They served beef stew for 3 weeks straight. So now when you see beef stew around me, I get war flashbacks.
No beef stew for this man.
Good.
Noted.
Good. And one other thing. I don't know if this is a big deal to you, Eric, but I like waking up with the sun's rays shining down on me. I couldn't do that. There were no windows where I was sleeping.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a big deal to you?
That'll mess with your rhythm.
Yeah. Do you like waking up to the sun's rays shining on you?
I do like to wake up in a lit room. It doesn't bother me. I like to be up in the morning.
Yep. So after that, they put us in Knoxville, and that was where all my health issues developed because we were all essentially cave people. There was little to no interaction.
And you were just what, doing school all day?
Pretty much, yeah. Locked in a room in the snow.
Oof. Snow. That's
I know I'm going to go through it again, but
yeah.
This time it's going to be a much better experience.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Hmm. So were you, at that point, you just had to be really focused on your education, yeah?
Yeah, but eventually it came to a point where I just had enough. So I had to leave the school. And then after that, I decided to make a Christmas album, which is album 6.
Yeah?
Yep, and of all my pre-Venom albums, that one's my favorite.
Yeah, well, tell me about that. What inspired you to do that?
Well, Christmas is my favorite time of the year. I love giving to others. And I thought I'd reflect that in this album. And also I felt that I could actually reach more people with a Christmas album, playing songs that they already know, instrumental versions of that. That same year, there was an album called Disney Super Guitar, in which a bunch of guitar heroes of mine played random Disney songs, instrumental versions.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's crazy. Who was some of the ones that were on that?
Zach Wilde, Paul Gilbert, Mike Orlando, George Lynch, Bumblefoot.
Dang. Bumblefoot's brother lives here in Sarasota.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great guy. His name's Jeff. Shout out, Jeff. Yeah. And Bumblefoot's a crazy awesome guitar player.
He is.
You ever play a fretless guitar?
I don't think so.
Bumblefoot's got the fretless, the double neck that has the fretless. That's what I always think of when I hear his name.
Yeah. So I put it out and gained a little bit of traction, but not what I was hoping for.
How did you choose songs for that?
I just went with my gut. I just played whatever I felt like playing. And again, still don't know how to play from the heart yet. I didn't learn how to play from the heart until I met Johnny Ray from The Morning. And basically what he taught me was, without explicitly saying it, is just feel it and write it down.
Yeah, how did that click?
Well, he was looking for another guitar player to fill in for his guitar player in Italy, who's my current teacher, Francesco Pinter. And our mutual friend, Regis, suggested me to try out for The Morning. And that's how I met Andrew, too.
Oh, nice.
And I didn't get the part, but it's okay. Made me realize I had a lot of growing up to do.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
How was that? Was that an audition process?
It was an audition process.
How did that go? I mean, what was the process like for people that aren't familiar with how an audition can go sometimes?
You drive out to where they're performing and you jam with them and you see how things go. And they're like, you killed the audition. But at that time, I was getting ready to go to Miami for grad school over in Barry University. I did a master's of biomedical science program there to help me get back into medical school. But I ended up not going back.
What do you think caused that?
Well, I did get some interviews, but I didn't get in. So I decided to look for a different output. So I chose nursing, and that didn't work out either. Even though throughout my time in nursing school, I made amazing, amazing friends. Shout out to you all. You're amazing.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Love it. Sometimes that's, you know, sometimes yeah. It is the friends we made along the way.
It really is. And Eric, sometimes I ask myself, well, I don't ask. I say to myself, if I was a doctor now, I wouldn't have made any of those friends. Is it worth giving up those friends just to have an MD or a DO degree? My answer to that question is absolutely not.
Yeah. Plus, you got time.
Yep.
This, you know, the friendships are invaluable when you can get them. And I agree with you there.
They really are. Your friends helped you get to where you are today. Be Amen. Thankful for them.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen. Could not agree more. Mm-hmm. So take me back now. I guess we're at album 6.
Yep. That was the Christmas album. Yeah. Album 7 was Distant Lightning. And I pretend that I never made that album. A lot of the songs felt like afterthoughts and they didn't feel complete. Do you understand what I'm saying?
A little bit. What do you mean?
Like, I felt like I could have put better ideas into it, but the stuff that I put into it was just...
Just doing it to do it, you mean?
Pretty much doing it to do it.
So this was pre-learning to play from the heart, as you put it?
Yep.
So was it starting to become really apparent to you then when you were writing these songs?
Absolutely. Okay. It was becoming very apparent. Then when I was in grad school at home from COVID, I started writing Venom. That was, I felt, for the first time writing from the heart. I wrote a song called Life on Bloodshed for an old friend of mine who got senselessly killed. That was, I think, the first moment where I actually played from the heart. I had a hard time writing lyrics, though, so I asked my friend Brandon from Kiss of Betrayal to help with the lyrics. But the music, it was all completely heartfelt.
So do you think that it was just... having that heavy of a situation you were trying to express that helped you learn to play from the heart, or was it something that happened before that and this was just the first time it came out?
I think that situation was what made things click for writing from the heart.
Yeah.
If you listen to the rest of Venom, there's only one song that felt like an afterthought. It was Category 5, which was the Opeth song. I felt like I included it there just to have something influenced by Opeth. That's another thing when you're writing, Eric. Don't worry about, does this riff sound like that band or this band? Just write whatever you're feeling.
How long did it take you to learn that? Do you think that was the time?
I think it was the time, and it took me over a decade.
And do you think the big thing from the difference was in the beginning you wanted to write things that people liked, or you were too busy still trying to play like your heroes?
A little bit of both, but mostly trying to play like my heroes.
But now by the time it was undeniable, by the time you hit album 7 and 8, you're starting to have your own Marco style.
That's right.
So how did that feel?
It felt awesome. And it's a little bit hard to explain, but once you write something from the heart for the first time, you'll know. As I said, it's kind of hard to explain that.
Yeah, for sure. So what was it like when you were tracking? Did it hit you when you were tracking it, or when you were all done with it? It was like, wait a minute, this one's different.
It hit me when I was recording it in a demo, when I recorded it on Logic Pro X. And I remember when I used to stream on Twitch, I streamed myself recording that song and people could see the sadness in my face. And so I channeled that into this song.
Tell me about recording and playing on Twitch. Did you start doing that when you were, when it was COVID time or what?
I did that in COVID time, yes. Even though on Twitch, I mostly streamed Smash Brothers.
Nice. Oh, I don't even want to go there.
Why not?
I've got a problem with Smash Brothers.
Me too. Who do you play?
I'm not very good at it, but I love to play and I don't mind getting beat repeatedly. The one that it's been a couple of years since I played, but I always played the big king guy in the cup. Oh God, the big fat
penguin guy.
No, he's like he's. Tell me one of the names.
King K. Rool.
Yes, That, him.
Yeah. He's fun.
Yes, that was always my character. Yeah. But like I said, I have a problem with things that if I'm not very good at it, like, this is how I got to play in guitar, sidebar. I wasn't very good at it in the beginning. I was like, I'm going to get good at this. Uh-huh. I don't care how long it takes me. Smash Brothers, I'm still not good at, but I'll enjoy playing. Guitar, I can at least, you know, win
a level.
I used
to play in tournaments, and oh man, if I had a dollar for every set that I lost that I feel I should have won, I'd be a millionaire by now.
Yeah. But that game is a fun one. So yeah,
and I managed to gain a bit of a following with it during COVID. In fact, I was trained by one of the best Sonic players in the whole entire world. She plays in Canada. Her tag is Supergirl Kels. And she taught me a lot about things like stage control and the importance of doubles.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So how did that come to be?
She was advertising coaching sessions, and I was like, this sounds interesting. I think I'll do it.
Oh,
so
nice. And she had, and since she was Sonic something she was advertising?
Yeah, she's the best Sonic player in Canada.
Oh, nice. So you
AKA my birth country.
You were born in Canada?
That's right.
Nice. Oh, I guess you did tell me that when we were at Devin Townsend.
Yep.
Who's also Canadian.
Yeah, I know.
That's why. I remember that coming up.
He's from, I think, Vancouver.
Yeah, I think you're right.
My dad's sister and her family live there too.
Yeah, I've never been to Canada, but I heard it's beautiful. I grew up in Wisconsin, so I feel like I got diet Canada.
It was like you did.
Half Canada.
Yep.
Okay, so now you're writing from the heart, and you're starting to write, you know, more songs that are feeling like they're Marco songs.
Yep.
And the Twitch thing is getting some people paying attention to you. Mm-hmm. And where are you putting out your music? Just streaming services? And
yeah, Apple Music, Spotify.
Were you doing like a Bandcamp thing too?
Or no, I wasn't.
Just letting it stream?
Just stream.
Okay. And was your goal with that, you just want to put the music out? You don't care
pretty
how it
much,
gets
yeah.
there, just get it out
that
there?
That was the whole goal, but I don't think it's a very good goal to have. Because if you're putting it out there and no one's listening, what are you doing it for?
Well, I guess that begs the question. But before there was streaming service, people still made demo tapes no one listened to.
That's true. But eventually they got into a studio and did professional recordings.
True. I guess you got to make it for you, mm-hmm. no matter what.
There is one very important thing I need to mention about Venom.
Yeah.
It includes my best instrumental ever.
Yeah.
Which is called Venom. And I was very angry at the time seeing all my friends from med school graduate. And I channeled that anger and I put it onto that song. And it turned out to be great.
What do you think separated that one from your ones before it?
Probably because I understood the concept of soloing where appropriate. There are a lot of instrumentals in which you just let the riffs do the talking. Venom does have a solo, but there's a part that goes da 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 da, and a solo over that just wouldn't work. If you listen to my earlier stuff, it's 90% solos and 10% riffs only. That's another thing that separates my current music from the past. It's more about the riffs. I let them do the talking. I still do a lot of solos, but I think the riffs are just as important. And Eric, I always say this whenever I write a song is as good as its chorus. If you have a song and it doesn't have a good chorus, no one's going to listen to it.
Yeah?
The chorus is the part that everyone should be singing along to.
No matter what kind of solo you got.
That's right.
What made that come to be such a solid ethos for you?
Probably the realization of how badass that riff that I described earlier was without a solo.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try to put a solo over that first?
Yep, and it made it sound so wimpy.
Yeah?
Like, you've seen that SpongeBob meme with Buzz SpongeBob and then SpongeBob going all happy like this, looking all weak?
Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine that meme, but with a solo over that riff that I described. And once you remove that solo, it became Buff SpongeBob.
Yeah, it's like the metal version. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Speaking of SpongeBob, I'm sure you watched it a lot back in the day.
Oh, most definitely. I've raised three kids to boot, too.
Yep, so did I.
Yeah, SpongeBob is a classic.
You want to hear my Patrick impersonation?
I would love to.
All right, what line do you want? I want to do the Ugly Barnacle.
Hey, if you're going to offer the impression, you get to decide the line.
All right, I'll do the Ugly Barnacle then.
Okay.
It's called the Ugly Barnacle. Once there was an ugly barnacle. He was so ugly that everyone died. The end.
That's good.
That's another thing. I'm an impressionist. I can do a lot of impersonations.
Yeah, when did you discover that?
Probably when I was 16 or 17, I became known throughout high school for impersonating characters like Mr. Mackey from South Park, which I can't do that well anymore.
Yeah.
Joseph Biden Klein.
My voice is too low now for that.
Yeah. That's awesome. Have you ever done any recording or voice acting or anything like that?
No, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
I was going to say, I think that's something you could probably have a lot of fun with.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Now the impression everyone knows me for is Johnny Bravo. Whenever I did start doing karaoke with Johnny Ray, he would say to me, Marco, get up and do Johnny Bravo. So I did.
Nice. Do you like to do karaoke? You like to sing?
Yeah, I do. I don't think I'm at that point now where I can sing on my albums just yet.
That was going to be my next question. Do you think you want to get there, though?
Probably, but I really like the singers that I work with.
Yeah.
So I'd have to let them go, and I really don't want to.
Or you got to do duets.
That's true, but they're really awesome guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then it's nice when you can just focus on the guitar, too. Singing yep. and playing guitar can be difficult when you're playing the leads like you are, for sure.
They really can.
So when you're recording album 8 and it's starting to be a little bit more now
yeah.
in the idea of songs, verses, and choruses, not solos everywhere.
Yes.
What are you thinking? Are you thinking like, I want to play these songs live, or is all this still just a matter of you just want to record it?
Yes, I want to play these songs live, and I really wanted to, but then I started nursing school right when I released Venom, so I couldn't. It was an accelerated program, so you can only imagine how intense that was.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it was a four-semester program, and all the friends that I made there, as I said earlier, they're probably the best friends that I've ever had.
Nice.
And I remember I'd do little parties, and some of them would come. And for my birthday that year, some of them came to hang out with me, and they did last year as well.
Nice.
As a matter of fact, one of them taught me how to play pickleball.
Nice.
Yeah, now I love pickleball. I don't know if you like it, Eric.
I haven't played it yet, but I know people get highly addicted once they mm-hmm. learn.
Pickleball is basically tennis and ping pong matched into one.
I'm not opposed to miniature tennis or oversized ping pong.
Yeah.
Either one.
And in case you're wondering, I also play regular tennis. I was on my high school tennis team.
Yeah, do you do other athletics still too?
I do martial arts.
Oh, yeah. And tell me a little bit about that. And tell me a little bit about how you feel martial arts plays into your ability to be self-disciplined and write these songs.
Absolutely.
And do the educational things you've done.
So the first martial art I ever did was karate.
How old were you then?
I was 15. And karate, you probably didn't know, has a bunch of different styles. The style everyone thinks of when they hear karate is Shotokan. But the style that I did was called Goju-Ryu. And what separates it from other styles is its emphasis on breathing correctly and doing the right forms.
Like a Tai Chi thing more?
More or less, yeah. And I got to my black belt in it.
Nice. How long did that take you?
4 years.
Holy smokes.
And a week of really intense exercise. I had to do push-ups on my knuckles on solid concrete over a week to get that thing.
So,
I forgot the value. 1,000 push-ups.
So, okay. Do you feel that you had a nature to have good self-discipline and that's what allowed you to do things like this, or doing things like this taught you that?
Doing things like martial arts taught me good discipline. It taught me self-control and how to suppress things like anger.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So how do you feel that that's helped you in the rest of your life with like things like your education, the ups and downs in your education, and steadily making so much music?
Nowadays, if there's a troublesome moment, I approach it with a cool and calm demeanor. I don't like to get overly worked up and get all emotional over a problem.
Yeah.
It just doesn't help. And yeah, I was afraid looking out of the window when the hurricane struck the island I was on. But eventually, I had to come to grips with it and realize to myself, I might be safe, I might not be safe. But when I woke up the next morning, I was safe. And I didn't panic about how I was going to let my family and friends back home know that I was okay. I heard about school announcements from word of mouth, so I always went there. And they had little satellite phones, so I was able to get in contact with my parents. And they, of course, posted on Facebook that I was okay.
Right, to let everybody know.
Yeah, so everyone was relieved to hear that.
And where were you at this point again?
On a little island called Dominica.
Where is that?
It's in the Caribbean.
And that's where the school was?
That's where the school was, yes. why I went to that school was because my uncle, who's an ER doctor, the top ranked ER doctor in Manitoba, the Canadian province, he went to that school.
Oh, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Love it when you can have a generational thing like that.
Exactly.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to ask you a couple more things about your journey coming up. Well, actually, what I want to do is tie up album 9, because that's where we're at.
Yes.
So let's do that first. Talk to me a little bit about now. We've Tarantino'd all our way back to the present.
Yep.
Album 9 came, you did Power Core. That one came out just a couple of months ago, right?
Or yeah, not even January. That long ago.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how long did it take you to write and record that one, and what was the process like? Did you do all that by yourself too?
I wrote and recorded by myself, but I had a producer. Well, two. One guy for recording, another guy for mastering.
Okay.
Guy I recorded with is a guy in Orlando named Patrick Finster. He sings and plays guitar in the band Nail Wound. They put out a new song, by the way, and I recommend you listen to it because it's awesome.
Nice.
Patrick, shout out to you. You're amazing.
Yeah, I love checking out new music. I'll definitely check it out.
And I remember when I came to his apartment in Orlando, he asked me to do some shreddy stuff, and eventually he asked me to play Master Puppets with only downstrokes. And when I did all that, he was like, dude, you are one of the three best guitarists I've ever recorded. It was very flattering. And I asked him, who are the other two? And he said, you probably don't know, but the guy's from Noctis. And that made me really happy because I did shows with those dudes.
No way.
Yeah, I love Noctis. They're dear friends of mine.
Very cool. Love it when life comes full circle like that.
Yeah, Barbara and Victor, monster guitar players. Unbelievable.
So I guess let me ask you this. If you could venture a number, this will lead into some of when we have you playing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to practice and keep your chops up and getting better?
Well, I do some spider drills like my dad always nagged me to do for years. And I also learned other guitar players' exercise. I used to watch a bunch of guitar videos when I was starting out. I watched John Petrucci's Rock Discipline video and Marty Friedman's Melodic Control. And some exercises from those really helped with my dexterity and with my feel.
So you really dedicated learning exercises.
I did.
And then were you just running them over and over and over again?
Yep.
Nice.
And learning other people's songs, of course.
Yeah. But if you don't learn the techniques, it's really hard to learn the songs.
That's true.
This is
back to Power Chord. For me, it is now the gold standard for all my future compositions and in bands that I will join in the future. Could I discuss each song?
Yeah, let's do.
Okay,
there are
7 songs. So after I left nursing school, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do something else in medicine. But then I had a neighbor who had me at his house over for Thanksgiving dinner. And he said he could help me get into alternative medical programs like anesthesiologist assistant or surgical neurophysiology. And I realized to myself, I can still do this. I'm going to write a song about it. So remember earlier when I said I was feeling the lyrics and I was thinking to myself, write this down?
Yeah.
Well, that song is a song that I just described now. It's called Anesthesia, No Easy Way Out.
Nice.
And I started working from home, but when I got into the program I'm doing this summer, I was a little bit hesitant to it, but then I thought to myself, what do I write anesthesia for if I'm not doing it? I'm going to do it.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. So another song, From Within, which was the last single I released before I released the album. And it's an uplifting song. It's supposed to be the kind of song that you listen to when you go to the gym. So that way you feel all powerful.
Nice. You got to have some power in the power core.
That's right.
Yes.
And that song has probably my favorite guitar solo that I ever wrote. Ever since I wrote my song, My Strength Returning, that song had my favorite solo. But now this one, From Within, dethroned it.
Nice.
Because my technique was better and I was using more of my economy picking.
And it's nice to feel your own progress a little bit too, yeah?
Oh, my economy picking. I got to discuss about that.
Yeah?
My teacher, Francesco, he was the one who pointed that out. And he said to one of his friends, yo, I have a student who's an excellent economy picker. So he had me do a video of me doing an economy picking exercise, steadily increasing speed. He's like, that's amazing. How do you economy pick?
Nice. Yeah, it's weird how sometimes the things that you're not good at, you find eventually become a strength.
Mm-hmm. There are some songs that are self-reflective. Sacrifice for Sandy's about that. It's basically all the stuff you got to deal with in life. And I wrote that song with my parents and their business in mind. And I remember them constantly hearing me about all these problems they have to deal with. And even though part of them wants to give it up, another part of them doesn't. Because
right.
They feel that they worked that hard to get it. but the song is meant to make the listener reflect to where they're at in life right now. And if they want a better life for themselves, they got to deal with a lot more bullshit. So that song is my question to the listener. Are you, whoever your name is, are you ready to deal with more bullshit to live a better life?
Powerful.
Are you ready, Eric?
I'm born ready.
All right. I'd love to hear it.
That's my anytime anyone has ever asked me if I'm ready for anything, my answer is always born ready.
Excellent.
I was born ready. I came out ready.
We need more people like you, Eric.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Next song, What We Accomplished. That was my thank you to all the friends that I made in nursing school. I was at a really low point in my life. People spread lies about me during clinicals that weren't true. Mm. So I said to the program, hey, none of this happened. I still want to be in here. And I had all my friends help proofread my letters. And even though we didn't succeed in keeping me with them, we became closer because of it. And I'm still in contact with a lot of them. And I thank them every day for their help. And my family's grateful for them as well.
That's what it's all about, being able to have the gratitude in the end.
Yep. And the next song, Find Your Flame. Sonic Frontiers came out right when I was in nursing school. And I listened to the Big Bosses themes, and I was like, I need to learn all these songs. So I did, and I uploaded a video of me playing all four of those songs. They're called Undefeatable, Breakthrough It All, Find Your Flame, and I'm Here. Find Your Flame is my favorite one of them all, so I decided to make that into the album.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. How long does it take you to learn those pieces?
It depends on how much I love them. If I absolutely love something or if I think it's really beautiful, I can learn it like that.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Because it just sticks with me. And I think a lot of people feel that same way. You probably do, Eric.
Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. So those songs you're obviously learning by ear.
Yeah. Even though I'll admit on the Find Your Flame portion of the video I just mentioned, I played the riff incorrectly. I played it all open string, but I think I was in the wrong tuning. I was in drop E-flat. The song is correctly played in drop D1. But there's an important lesson that I learned. If you're learning a song by ear and you can't make out the notes, pitch shift the song up. It'll be easier for you to hear the notes, and you can learn it by ear better.
Good call.
Mm-hmm.
Good call.
So the next song is called Throne, and that's about losing your best friend over something completely stupid.
Or? That's a big or. Like losing your best friend or something stupid?
I meant to say over.
Oh, I thought you said or. Okay, over something stupid.
Did I say or?
Maybe that's all I heard.
I meant to say over.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that losing your best friend would not be something stupid.
Yeah, and in that one, the Dream Theater influence is really apparent. I consider the intro to that song if Panic Attack by Dream Theater and Throes of Perdition by Trivium had a baby.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
That's some serious DNA there.
Oh, yeah. And the last song, To Reminisce, that was the last song I wrote for my previous band. And if we released that song, I guarantee you people would have said it was the best song by that band.
Yeah. Well, most artists feel, or most creative people feel, if they're lucky, that the last thing they put out is always the thing that they're happiest with. And they feel like they've made the most ground with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad to hear that because there's always progress in it if you can keep pushing forward.
There's always progress.
So now that's taken us to where we're at today.
Yep.
You're going to be heading on another little adventure here for a little bit.
Yep.
Talk to me about that adventure and what music's going to look like for you in this time.
You got it. Well, right now I'm doing a bunch of Avenged Sevenfold solos and solos by other bands per request. It's made me gain over 1,000 views on my YouTube channel.
Nice.
So there's steady growth.
Yeah, we'll definitely link to your videos. I love watching you playing.
I might have done the music business thing wrong, where I released and then did videos. I think it should have been... I tried to do videos to build up the hype, but they only gained around 500 views. The only one that had a couple of thousand views was my cover of the Sea of Lies solo by Symphony X.
Well, your videos will definitely link to them. I love watching your playing. Yeah,
thank you. Now, my videos getting 1,000 views is happening more consistently.
Yeah, that'll only be a matter of time, of course, when people start to, you know, there's so many people, so many guitar players, so much guitar content out there, they got to find you, and then you're good.
Mm-hmm.
How much time do you spend making guitar videos or anything, or is that just something that you can do pretty easily? You just pick up the guitar and play through a solo and there's your video.
Eric, I'm afraid that's not how it works.
No, I know. It generally isn't. That's why I got to ask.
Sometimes I could spend as much as 3 hours recording a solo. I like to make sure that the take is perfect. I'm very detail-oriented, so it could take quite a bit of time for me to record a solo and get it down right. And sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, in the videos, it's you playing. It's not you playing over the top of your recordings.
No, how it works is I'm videotaping myself while I'm audio recording on my computer.
Okay.
And I'm putting the audio recording over the video, with the video not completely muted. I leave some audio in there so you can hear what notes I'm accenting in case you might want to learn the solo yourself.
Ah, good call. Mm-hmm. Good call. That way you can actually hear some of the string.
Yeah. And that, I think, is an important part about music, knowing what notes to accent. It helps you stay on beat with the music, and it really helps you with your composition.
What do you think has helped you the most with your composition? Just doing it repeatedly?
I have to say doing it repeatedly and knowing what rhythm the song is in, and also getting some advice from my teacher, Francesco.
Yeah, shout out to all the mentors.
Oh my God, the mentors, they get you to where you are, man.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm actually really relieved to hear you say that, because I've been able to meet a lot of very talented musicians lately who are much younger than me. Guilty. And
it's okay.
They've been able to learn from YouTube, and they are so much better than I was, so much quicker in life. But then they make a whole bunch of other like little mistakes that you can tell nobody was ever in the room to correct them on. Mm-hmm. So it's like the curves you can jump when you're taught from a human, sometimes people forget about now. I feel like.
Here's a little rule of thumb, Eric. The better you get, the more you need it from a teacher.
Yeah, I could agree with that.
Because as you get advanced, it's harder to notice where you're weak at. A teacher can point that out quickly.
Very good observation. Very mm-hmm. good observation.
Yeah, Francesco, he taught me so much. He taught me a lot of things that I never knew before.
Well, this is what we're going to do. I want to ask you your fun question that we're going to get. We normally get everybody out of here on something fun, but I'm going to get you out of here on something fun. I'm going to ask you your fun question, and then we're going to play a little bit of guitar that we're going to tag on the end of this. Well, I have two things I want you to do on, or I would like for you to play on guitar.
Yeah.
So your fun question is this. If you could write a song with anyone or be on stage with any band, either one of those, who would it be and what are you doing?
Don't make me choose. I listen to hundreds of bands. It's so hard to pick one.
You can give me a smattering. I'm not into rules. We're not rigid.
Okay, fine. If I had to pick one, I'd pick Trivium, because that's my favorite band. And Matt Hafey is one of the coolest dudes ever. And he's a big martial arts buff like me. He got his black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu recently.
Oh, I didn't know that. Plus, he's a Florida boy, too.
Yep. And I got back into martial arts myself. I restarted judo. I first did it over 10 years ago and I got my yellow belt, but last October I got my orange belt, and just last week I got my green belt.
Dang. Well, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
I'm still on my leather belt from Nordstrom Rack. I got it. I have no legitimate belts.
You got to try martial arts sometime, Eric. They're so fun.
Yeah, that's Seth is always trying to get me to go to jiu-jitsu with him, and I definitely want to. I'm not opposed to it at all.
Yeah, but if you want to protect your hands, do a grappling art. Try not to do a striking art.
Yeah.
Or if you decide to do a striking art, wear hand protection.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. My hands, I need them.
So do I.
I was going to say, I'm in the same boat as you. Can't.
Yep.
If I don't even care if I didn't make any money or do anything with it. If I couldn't play guitar, I don't know what I'd do with myself. The rest of my life would grind to a halt, I think. Well, Marco, I couldn't thank you enough for coming down. I appreciate it. Let's play a little.
Thank you for being here, Eric.
Yeah.
While I'm here, I'd like to talk about the guitar a little bit.
Yeah, tell me about the guitar, and then let's play it a little bit.
Yeah, so this thing right here is my Japanese Pro Series Jackson that I got on my 17th birthday back in 2011 from my dad.
Shout out all birthday guitars.
Heck yeah. When I got this thing, it originally came with EMGs, but I swapped them out for a different set of EMGs. And then I eventually got these Fishman pickups here. These are Matt Hafey's signature Fishman pickups, and they sound fantastic.
Trivium.
Yep. And also, they don't have any latency.
Right.
Which became a gripe for me with EMGs recently.
Yeah.
If you listen to my Shogun playthrough, you can hear there's a little bit of delay because I was using EMGs, but with my Sensei playthrough, there was no delay. And I was using another guitar that had Fishman's.
Mm. And all the exact same stuff otherwise?
Yep.
Nice.
This thing has been with me since album two, The Newcomer. And I think I'm going to keep this on every single album for the future.
Yeah, well, when you got your baby, you got your baby.
Yeah. This thing's in great condition for its age. It's 14 years old, but it plays better than all my other guitars.
And what tuning do you normally play in? A standard with a B, or are you dropping everything?
Well, I play in standard with a B. For Venom, I took a page from Devin Townsend's book, and I wrote an open B. F-sharp B, F-sharp B, F-sharp B, D-sharp.
Yeah.
Recently, I became a fan of drop C tuning.
Yeah.
So when I was writing Throne, I thought to myself, how can I take drop C further? So I took the low B string and I tuned it down to G.
That's what I was just going to ask. Yeah.
I call it drop G C tuning.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good Devin Townsend tuning too, when you get that low string being a G with C the rest of it. Yeah, nice. Is that what you're tuned to now?
Not this one.
Oh, okay.
That one, my 7-string Rhodes is in that tuning.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could, if you want to, I would like you to demonstrate the first thing, show what you do to kind of practice.
I want to give a little story here. When I started learning guitar, I watched a video of how to play Pyramid Cave, and I remember seeing a guy do it, but I just went all like this, and I had a hard time following along. I didn't learn the song properly until I got into high school, when I started playing its catchy melody, though.
Love it.
That's catchy. You got to admit that.
Yeah,
yeah. You played Sonic Adventure 2, haven't you?
Yes.
Oh, so you remember that level.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a youth flashback.
Glad I was able to invoke some nostalgia.
Oh, I loved it. Loved it.
Thank you.
So if you would you maybe show me like the spider exercises, some of the things you do?
Yeah.
Because I don't think a lot of people understand, they don't understand quite what you got to do to make sure your dexterity stays up.
Well, what my dad did was he would take all four fingers and play them across all strings. And take a step further, I focus on my hand crossing too. You see how my hand is rotating?
Yeah.
And for I call him the version John Petrucci did in Rock Discipline, the Petrucci feels. You know when he does that? That's another good way I like to wake up my hands. And there's another exercise he did that I absolutely love. It's playing chords and switching your fingers around. You know what I'm talking about? That's actually part of a song I wrote for my Christmas album called White Friday.
Really?
Yep. It's the opposite of Black Friday.
I love it. Yeah, it's when you can unlock those things where you find the different inversions without having to move your hand too much. It's just finger placement.
Absolutely. And Peter Derena from Seven Spires taught me that.
Nice. And was that something that was you were more able to visualize because of learning piano too?
You could say so.
Because of the inverting the chords on the piano?
You could, even though I didn't understand chords on piano, really. I gotta say, piano is so much tougher than guitar. After playing guitar for so long, I can't go back to piano. A lot of times when I play piano, I'm like, oh, that's not the right note. Nope, this is. Oh, nope, this.
Yeah,
it's quite an adjustment.
Yeah, for sure. Especially since your guitar skill is so honed.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, but guitar I actually put time and effort into.
Right.
And I didn't need my parents to push me to play guitar.
Yeah.
Whereas they did on piano.
Yeah, that's the key thing, wanting to do it.
Oh, yeah.
That's when you can practice for hours and not realize it's been hours.
Yep.
You know, and that's when you're getting better and you don't even notice it. So the other thing I wanted you to maybe demonstrate for us, and then you can play anything you like. If you could play for me maybe your top one or two or three riffs you learned throughout your life that were the most meaningful to you, like maybe, you know, when you learned Enter Sandman or whatever, just like your three riffs that are part of Marco's guitar DNA.
Well, Master Puppets definitely has to be out there because I was doing it with only downstrokes before I could even do upstrokes.
Okay, show me that. I was just going to say, when you learn to do the alternate picking, does it seem to you like, okay, this is too easy now?
You could say so. And I want to give everyone a little trick for playing the Master of Puppets riff. Hold the pick lightly. You loosen up, you're going to get tired quicker. Trust me.
Yeah?
Yep. Because I wasn't gripping it so hard. I was gripping it loosely.
Right.
And I think that's what throws a lot of people off. They think the harder they hold the pick, the more power they can get out of it, which I don't think is true.
No, yeah,
it's all about looseness, Eric.
I was going to say, it's all about that right hand.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting observation.
Mm-hmm.
So what was one of the second riffs that started? I mean, that Master Puppets downstroke, that's how you know you learned that one on your own.
Mm-hmm.
So what's one of your other staple riffs?
Let's see. When I just got this thing, I immediately learned The Mirror by Dream Theater. Can I play four?
Sure, absolutely.
So this was the first thing I played. It's The Mirror.
And that's an odd time signature.
Yeah. But it's the same chord every time.
Yeah.
That was the awakening moment where I realized I could play Prague. And then after that, I learned a Trivium song. It was Torn Between Scylla and Charybdis from the album Shogun, which is easily among my top three favorite albums of all time. And it was one of the albums that made me interested in Japanese culture because they used that phrase, Kirisute Gomen, which is what the samurai would say before they chopped off their victims' heads.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you've heard the song Torn Between Scylla and Charybdis, have you?
Yeah.
So during this part, I'd rather play the riff that plays underneath it, but much more epic in my opinion.
Yeah.
Especially epic with chords. Like those chords, they hit you in the guts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an epic track.
It really is, and I'm really bummed that Trivium doesn't play it live. If they do play it live next time I see them, I'm going to flip. When I first saw them, they did He Who Spawned the Furies for the first time. That made me really happy.
Yeah, that's a classic too.
Mm-hmm.
I really got into that Catastrophist song in that album. I liked that one. So play the other riffs that you want, and then I want you to play me one of your Marco riffs.
Yeah, well, I was a big Iron Maiden fan, and it eventually led me to power metal. I think the number of the beast. And also the trooper with his scalping riff.
Love that. I love that song.
I met Steve Harris once.
Yeah?
Yeah. He was doing a show in Tampa with his other band, British Lion.
Nice.
So, and he was doing autographs and other things right in front of the venue. So I got to meet him and take a picture of him. And he signed my copy of their album, Power Slave.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's cool. He's such a monster.
Oh my God, he's a legend.
Yeah, he's a monster. So what's riff four?
That was riff four that I played earlier, Iron Maiden stuff.
Okay, so then play for me, and then we'll get you out of here. Right. Play for me one of your favorite riffs of yours.
Well, here's one of my favorite licks. It's from my song From Within. Oops. Just
full speed.
Love it.
That's a mixture of economy picking, alternate picking, sweep picking, and hammer-ons. It's alternate picking going up, hammer-ons, and then sweeping, and economy picking here, and sliding up. And repeat that pattern in four positions.
Run it for me again. Now full speed. Love it.
The one part that might trip you up is the second part here, because for every part, I'm using my pointer finger, my middle finger, my pinky, but here, I have to use my ring finger to hit this note here.
And that seems out of position.
It can trip you up a bit if you're using only your all your fingers except for your ring finger.
Ah.
So it's more or less a nervous system thing.
Ah. So when you write a riff like that, are you thinking to yourself, this is my way to throw in all these different types of pickings, or that was just a matter of what needed to be done to get that melody out?
It was more, this is what needed to be done to get that melody out. I never think about what techniques I'm using. In fact, I don't even think about what advanced theory I'm using. I don't know I'm doing an advanced chord until the first time I hear it. I'm like, whenever I hear something and after I record it, I'm like, oh, I played a major seventh chord. Cool. That, I think, is another big hindrance. People are so hell-bent on using advanced theory that it hinders their songwriting, in my opinion. Do you think so, Eric?
Well, I think if you think about things too much, you can definitely screw up the good parts.
Yep.
I'll go along with that part for sure. I've watched a lot of creative things get thought to death and not usually necessary.
Sad but true.
Well, Marco, I can't thank you enough for coming down, my friend, and I wish you all of the best in the next leg, and when you got another record out and you're back in Florida, you're always welcome to come here, man. I very much appreciate hearing from you, and I appreciate you sharing some playing. You're the first person that's done some playing on the show, so you've broke new ground, my friend.
I feel honored. Thank you, Eric.
And that was one of the things I said. If Marco's coming in, I want to be able to play some guitar for people, so you broke new ground, my man.
Glad I could.
Thank you, sir. Very much appreciate it.